Chapter 8. Knowledge of the Eternal. Verses 1 through 4.
Arjuna uvacha, kim tad brahma kim adhyatmam kim karma purushottama adibhutam cha kim proktam adidaivam kim uchyate adi yajna katham kotra dehesmin madhusudana prayana kale cha katham gneyosi niyatatmabhi. Shri Bhagavanuvacha, aksharam brahma paramam swabhavo dhyatma muchyate bhuta bhavodbhavakaro visargaha karma sangita adibhutam kshara bhava purushaschadi daivatam adiyajno amevatra dehe deha brutamvara.
Arjuna said, what is Brahman with reference to the spiritual self, adiatman? What is karma, O highest of persons? What is it with reference to beings, adibhuta? And what with reference to the deities, adidaivata, is it said to be? What is it with reference to sacrificial observations within this body, adiyagya? O Madhusudana, how are you to be known at the hour of departure by those of controlled selves? The Blessed Lord said, the indestructible syllable, the supreme Brahman, the very transcendent nature, is the inward spiritual self. The emission, which is the cause of the production of the aspects of beings, is called karma. The perishable aspect is the one referred to concerning the being, and the conscious principle, Purusha, is of the deities. As sacrificial observances, it is I in this body, O best of the body-bearers. At the end of chapter 7, Sri Krishna tells Arjuna that one should know Brahman, Adiatma, Karma, Adibhuta, Adidaivata, and Adiyagya, and that at the final hour of departure, one should contemplate and meditate on the highest Lord alone. Arjuna does not comprehend the meaning of these words and wants to understand their profundity. In the 8th chapter, Sri Krishna answers all of Arjuna's questions. First, he explains that Brahman is the highest of all principles. The supreme Brahman alone exists and is the source of manifestation. Brahman is eternal and immutable. It is not subject to change, death, or destruction. Brahman is not different from the innermost self of every individual. Brahman is the liberated state of consciousness. It is the state in which Sri Krishna abides, and that state of consciousness can also be attained by the aspirant. Those who have attained a state of tranquility and equanimity have the knowledge of Brahman. The word Adiatma is used for the supreme Brahman as it exists in every individual soul. There are two aspects of Brahman, the unmanifest and the manifest. As Brahman begins the process of manifestation, it divides itself into the transcendent subject, Adiatma, and the unmanifest source of all objects, Mula Prakriti. Adiatma refers to Brahman as the transcendent subject in every being. Whatever is done that results in beings coming into existence is called karma. Karma is the power that brings about the origination of all beings. It is the creative fire by which life is developed, elevated, and evolved. The existence of all living beings comes about because of the law of karma. The transcendent subject, Adiatma, the basis of all objectification, Mula Prakriti, and the creative principle, karma, are all aspects of Brahman. Sri Krishna says that he should be known in each of his aspects. All the objects that come into being are called bhuta. All the names and forms of the universe are perishable and subject to destruction. Whatever objects appear to exist in the material world are only forms of prakriti, and the term adibhuta refers to their perishable nature. In contrast to this, adidaivata is the principle of pure consciousness, Purusha, which is everywhere, and which is above all divinities. The term Adiyagya means myself as sacrifice. Sri Krishna as the Supreme Lord, the pure consciousness, rules over all sacrifice and is the recipient of all sacrifice. All sacrifices are directed toward the self, and that is called Adiyagya. The sacrifice that is continually taking place in the body is also directed toward the self. The Upanishads say that human life is a long series of sacrifices that should last for at least 100 years. Verses 5-8.
Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram yah prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatva saunshayah yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yajatyante kalevaram tam tamevaiti kaunteya sada tadbhava bhavitah tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyacha mayarpita mano buddhir mame vaishyasya saunshayam abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati parthanu chintayan.
He who departs remembering me at the last moment, after leaving the body, he comes to identify with me. There is no doubt in this. Remembering whichever aspect of mine as he leaves the body at the end, he reaches that very aspect, O son of Kunti, identified and always nurtured by that aspect. Therefore, remember me at all times and fight. With your mind and intelligence surrendered to me, you will come to me alone without doubt. With a mind joined in the yoga of practice and wandering nowhere else, contemplating the Supreme, Divine Person, one goes to him, O son of Pritha. Verses 5-8 explain how the aspirant should prepare himself for life hereafter. He should not be haunted by thoughts, desires, and attachments to the mundane world. At the last hour of one's departure from this world, he should remember the Lord of life, for one's last desire determines the course of his rebirth. If during that time the aspirant thinks only of the Lord, nothing of the world influences the course of his transition. How can one remember the Lord at that time? Every great tradition teaches a way to remember the Lord, either by remembering a mantra, a word, a syllable, or a set of words. When the pranas, inhalation and exhalation, which create a bridge between the conscious and unconscious life, the mortal and immortal parts of life, abandon their duties, the conscious mind, breath, senses, and body separate from the unconscious part of life. All the desires, merits, and demerits remain in the unconscious. One's prominent desires prompt him to assume a new garment. That is called rebirth. During that transition period, remembering a mantra is useful. It enables the voyage to be comfortable. At the time of death, ordinary people remember their worldly attachments and pleasures. That magnifies the pain and leads the mind to sorrow. But the aspirant who has clarity of mind remembers the name of the Lord, and thus does not have unpleasant experiences at the time of departure. When the mantra is remembered consciously, it is recorded by the unconscious. During the time of departure, when the conscious mind fails, any thought or desire that is prominent in the unconscious leads the individual according to its nature. It is very important to repeatedly remember the name of the Lord during one's lifetime, so that the impression created by repeated remembrance is the strongest impression in the unconscious, for it is the strongest motivation that becomes the leader. Many aspirants are not aware of the profound effects of remembering the mantra, but they should understand that no action remains unrecorded in the unconscious. The student should not be concerned about consciously noticing a result, but should continue remembering the mantra, so that it becomes embedded in the unconscious. there is no doubt that the aspirant who constantly remembers the Lord at the time of departure attains liberation. Many students wonder about life hereafter. After death, one does not go to any hell or heaven, but remains in his own habit patterns. Hell and heaven are merely the creations of one's own mind and habits. Those who understand the meaning of life know that the final hour is the deciding factor for whether one's voyage to the unknown will be pleasant or unpleasant. They prepare themselves for that hour. They depart from this world with a free mind and conscience, enjoying the eternal joy of the infinite. Whatever state an aspirant habitually remembers, the same he attains after leaving his body. One who has an auspicious state as his goal will reach it after death, and one who remembers worldly pleasures will continue to long for those pleasures after leaving his body. His desires, however, cannot be fulfilled in the state between death and birth, for then he has no senses and no objects with which to fulfill his desires. Thus he suffers. Those who are meditators, however, attain the deep state of tranquility and are never affected by the desire for worldly pleasure. They attain the state of perfection by identifying themselves with the Lord, and they finally become one with the Lord. Verses 9 through 13.
Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anoraniyam Samanusmaredyaha Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Adityavarnam Tamasaparastat Prayana Kale Manasachalena Bhaktya Yukto Yoga Balena Chaiva Bruvor Madhye Pranam Aveshya Samyak Satam Param Purusham Upaiti Divyam Yadaksharam Veda Vidovadanti Vishanti Yad Yatayo Vitaragaha Yadichanto Brahmacharyam Charanti Tatte Padam Sangrahena Pravakshye Sarvadvarani Samyamya Mano Hrudi Nirudhyacha Mudnyadhayatmana Pranam Astito Yogadharanam Om Ityekaksharam Brahma Vyaharan Mamanusmaran Yaprayati Tyajan Deham Sayati Paramam Gatim.
He who contemplates him who is the master of intuition, the ancient one, the giver of all commandments, more minute than the minute, sustainer of all, whose form is beyond thought, having the solar hue beyond darkness. At the hour of departure, with an unmoving mind, endowed with devotion and with the power of yoga, making the prana enter between the eyebrows properly, he reaches the supreme divine person. The indestructible syllable that the knowers of Veda know, that which the ascetics, free of attachments, enter, seeking which they practice celibacy, I shall teach you that word briefly. Closing all the doors of the body and retaining the mind in the heart, placing the prana in the crown of the head, established in the concentration of yoga. Om. This is Brahman, consisting of a single, indestructible syllable. He who, enunciating it and contemplating it, goes forth abandoning his body, he reaches the supreme state. The Lord is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent. He is the most ancient seer, and there is nothing that he does not know. He is the controller and ruler of all. He is extremely subtle and is not visible through the eyes of ordinary human minds. To meditate on him is difficult. He is full of light without any tinge of darkness. At the time of departure, one should remain in deep meditation on the Lord with full devotion and one-pointedness. Sri Krishna gives a brief explanation of the practice of meditation that incorporates a subtle breathing method. When the aspirant learns to be still in a steady posture, he finds that the incoming and outgoing breaths draw the attention of his mind. Meditation can only be profound if sushumna is applied. Sushumna is a joyous state of mind in which the meditator spontaneously attains an unusual calmness without any external distraction. One of the signs and symptoms of this state of mind is that the breath flows freely and equally through both nostrils. In the ordinary state, one of the nostrils remains predominant. Breath and mind are interdependent and are in the habit of reacting simultaneously. When the breath is calm and serene, the mind attains a state of joy. The aspirant should focus his mind at the space between the two eyebrows and should learn to visualize the light of life through which one sees, senses, and knows. When his meditation is strengthened, the light becomes more and more clear, and he finally reaches the source of light and life. The yogi who regularly practices meditation for a long time without interruptions in his practice attains that state. With the desire to attain the center of consciousness within, he observes complete celibacy. Here, celibacy does not refer to practice only on a physical level, but should be performed with mind, action, and speech. The yogi who learns to meditate by applying sushumna and incorporating the sacred syllable Om can attain a state of equilibrium. It is interesting to note that all mantras cannot be adjusted to the inhalation and exhalation process. Om is a smooth sound and does not create jerks or irregular rhythms in the breath. Yogis remember that sound all the time. It has been praised by the Vedas, the most ancient scriptures in the library of man. Those who cast off their mortal bodies remembering the Lord definitely reach the highest state. But one should not wait for the last hour of departure and learn to meditate only during the last days of his life. The wise person knows that in reality, one experiences death every moment. We die millions of times in one lifetime, and millions of times we are born. Every moment that passes by is like a moment of death. One moment dies and another moment is born. One experience dies and another comes into being. Death precedes birth and birth precedes death. Yet we experience a continuity of consciousness through these deaths and births. In a similar way, the pure consciousness remains through the deaths and births of the physical body. The human being is on a pilgrimage. His goal is the eternal abode where he finds perfect happiness, peace, and bliss. The ignorant ones who consider this earth their permanent abode are deluded. Every moment of life until one reaches his eternal abode is precious. Therefore, one should remember the Lord in every moment. That practice is called ajapa japa. Those who remember the name of the Lord in every breath of their lives are the fortunate few. When a student learns to remember the name of God in silence with a one-pointed mind and strengthens that habit, he can continue practicing anywhere and everywhere he goes. Thus, ajapa japa leads one to constant awareness of the self, which helps him during the period of departure. Verses 14 through 16.
Ananyacheta satatam yomam smarati nityashaha tasyaham sulabhah partha nitya yuktasya yoginaha mam upetya punarjanma dukkhalayam ashashvatam naapnuvanti mahatmanaha samsiddhim paramam gataha. Abrahma bhuvanallokaha punaravartinorjuna mam upetya tu kaunteya punarjanma navidyate.
He who, without turning his mind to any other, remembers me incessantly. To that yogi, who is ever united in yoga, I am easily available, O son of Pritha. Upon reaching me, the great-souled one, having attained the supreme fulfillment, no longer comes to rebirth, which is an impermanent abode of sorrows. All the way to the realm of Brahman, all the worlds revolve again and again, O Arjuna. Upon reaching me, however, O son of Kunti, there is no more rebirth. When the aspirant analyzes his existence in this world, he realizes that there is nothing permanent here. He focuses his mind on the Lord alone and remembers him all the time. That constant awareness gives him freedom from the dissipation of the mind, and then he establishes himself in the consciousness of that eternal self. Such a yogi is not born again and again. He is not subject to the rounds of deaths and births. The accomplished yogi is not required to come back again, for he has already attained liberation. The law of death and rebirth is not applicable to him. Verses 17 through 19.
Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyad brahmano viduhu, ratrim yuga sahasrantam deho ratra vidojanaha. Avyaktad vyaktayas sarvaha prabhavantyaharagame, ratriagame praliyante tatreva vyakta sangyake. Bhutagramasa evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate. Ratyagame vashapartha prabhavatyaharagame.
People who know day and night know that the day of Brahma extends to 1,000 aeons, and the night extends to 1,000 aeons also. All the manifest entities arise from the unmanifest upon the coming of the day, and upon the coming of the night they dissolve into that very thing called the unmanifest. This aggregate of beings and elements, born again and again, is then dissolved at the coming of the night, quite helplessly, O son of Pritha, and is produced again upon the arrival of the day. There are 4 yugas, or ages, Krita, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. The 4 together are called a Mahayuga, a great age. 1 Mahayuga consists of 4,326,000 years. 1,000 Mahayugas make 1 day of Brahma, and the night of Brahma is of the same duration. The day and night together are called a kalpa. 360 such units of day and night make 1 year of Brahma, and 100 such years is the life of Brahma. With each day of Brahma, the universe comes into being, and at the close of that day, all beings merge into the unmanifest Prakriti. That process goes on eternally. These verses explain that which physics and astronomy are trying to discover through external means: when the universe began, how it evolved, and if and when it will be annihilated. According to this view, the universe goes through an endless cycle of creation and annihilation. Each cycle takes a vast length of time as measured by the human frame of reference, but a much shorter time from the perspective of a more comprehensive state of consciousness. Physics has introduced to the modern world the concept that time is relative, but now we see that such a conception existed long ago in the cosmology of the ancient Vedic scriptures. In these verses, Sri Krishna makes Arjuna aware of the grand scale of the universe and the relative insignificance of all that Arjuna is attached to in his small world. These verses also give an inkling of the vastness of the universe over which Sri Krishna presides. Verses 20 through 22.
Parastasmattu bhavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha. Yassa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Avyaktokshara ityuktas tamahu paramam gatim. Yam prapya nani vartante taddhama paramam mama. Purushasa parapartha bhaktya labhyastvananyaya. Yasyantasthani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam.
But beyond that primordial unmanifest Prakriti is another eternal unmanifest entity who does not perish when all the beings perish. The unmanifest is called the indestructible syllable that is said to be the supreme status, upon attaining which they no longer return to the world. That is my supreme abode. He is the transcendent self, Purusha, to be attained through devotion, distracted toward none other, inside whom dwell all the beings, and by whom is all this spanned and pervaded. The time comes when the entire universe is annihilated by the great design of the Absolute. When everything that is manifest is destroyed, one unchanging principle remains that is never destroyed. That principle is called Akshara, immutable. It is the highest abode of the Absolute. The aspirant who has secured the knowledge of and attained that abode is no longer subject to birth and death. That eternal, unchanging, and everlasting principle is the highest goal of the aspirant. In that dwell all beings. It is the unmanifested pure consciousness that is eternal and changeless, whereas all else goes through a process of birth and death. That unmanifest reality is beyond the process of Prakriti and does not perish when the universe perishes. It is never changing and is everlasting, eternal, and infinite. Verses 23 through 26.
Yatra kale tvanavruttim avruttim chaiva yoginaha prayata yanti tam kalam vakshyami bharatarshava. Agnir jyoti rahas shuklah shanmasa uttarayanam. Tatra prayata gachanti brahma brahma vidojanaha. Dhumo ratristatha krishnaha shanmasa dakshinayanam. Tatra chandramasam jyotir yogi prapya nivartate. Shukla krishne gati hiete jagata shashvate mate. Ekaya yatyanavruttim anyaya vartate punaha.
The time departing in which the yogis return or do not return, I shall tell you of that time division, O bull among the Bharatas. Fire, light, the day, the moonlit fortnight, the 6 months of the northern solstice. Departing in that time, the people who know Brahman go to Brahman. Smoke, night, the dark lunar fortnight, the 6 months of the southern solstice, there the yogi attaining the lunar light returns. These white and dark directions of the world are said to be perennial. By one he no longer returns, by the other he returns again. Sri Krishna teaches Arjuna the knowledge of the two paths that deal with the art and science of death and dying. What is the right time to depart from this mortal world? Those who are self-realized cast off their bodies in the daytime during the bright half of the month, while the sun is in its northern course. They then attain Brahman. Those who follow the path of action drop their bodies at a nocturnal hour during the dark half of the month, while the sun is in its southern course, and they are reborn again. The path of those who are self-realized is called the path of light, whereas the path of those who die during the 6 months when the sun is in the southern course is called the path of smoke. Both paths exist eternally, but one leads to emancipation and the other to rebirth. The words Agni, Jyoti, Shukla are applied to the bright half of a month and indicate the light that shows the path. The words Dhuma, Ratri, Krishna are applied to the dark half of the month and indicate darkness or ignorance. These verses do not just refer to the external universe, but to the internal processes occurring within each person. There are two paths, the path of good, selfless service, and the path of evil, selfishness. By following the path of good and dedicating all the fruits of one's actions, one remains liberated in the midst of performing his duty. But following the path of pleasure and living a selfish life leads to sorrow and pain. The path of good is the path of freedom, whereas the path of selfishness causes births and deaths. According to yoga, there are three paths. The path of Pingala, the right breath, is the path of the sun, light, and day. The path of Ida, the left breath, is that of night and darkness. The yogi who knows how to change from Ida to Pingala and from Pingala to Ida has complete control over the course of these two breaths. Such a yogi knows how to apply Sushumna and thus attains a state of tranquility, of samadhi. That is the third path. Only two of these paths are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, the path of light and the path of darkness. The yogi who follows the path of the sun or light does not have to stumble through the dark path of ignorance, but one who does not have knowledge and does not practice yoga must go through the dark path. In his desire for the mundane objects of the world, his vision is obscured and his eyes remain blindfolded. His life is controlled by the gunas, for he does not practice the path of self-control. But the great yogi has self-control, and following the path of light, he reaches the highest abode of Brahman. The ignorant man, however, is subject to rebirth and suffers as a result of his selfishness. The ordinary person does not have control over the time he departs. He is swayed by prakriti, the three gunas, which determines the course of his life. But the yogi has profound control over his senses and mind. He can choose to cast off his body according to his wish, for he already understands life and its values thoroughly. For the yogi, dropping the body is just like taking off a garment. He does not remain attached to his body or to any other relationship related to the body. When the body is no longer a fit instrument, he decides to cast it off according to his will. The ordinary person does not have such a dynamic will or knowledge of the relationship of the body with the self. The path of light, knowledge, and sun is the path the great ones tread. Verses 27 and 28.
Naite sruti partha janan yogi muhyati kaschana tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjuna vedeshu yagneshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam atyeti tat sarvamidam viditva yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam.
Knowing these two paths, no yogi is ever confused. Therefore, O Arjuna, be united in yoga in all times. The fruit of merit that has been stated with regard to the Vedas, the sacrifices, ascetic endeavors, and charities, the yogi surpasses it all, knowing this and attains the primal and supreme peace. One who has knowledge of both paths, the path of light and the path of darkness, is never deluded by the darkness, by ignorance, for he knows the consequences of both paths. Such a yogi is never trapped by the charms, temptations, and allurements of the external world. Every moment of his life is devoted to the path of yoga. He never abandons the practices of yoga, so there is no chance of his downfall. He follows the path of yoga with full faith and a one-pointed mind. Yoga is an art and science that means skill in action, equanimity with regard to pleasure and pain, and freedom from attachment to mundane enjoyments. One who follows yoga is never deluded. Scriptural knowledge is helpful only to a certain extent, but the true yogi attains direct knowledge, which helps him to go beyond to the heart of the teachings of the Vedas. He is definitely superior to one who follows the scriptures and performs sacrifices according to the instructions given in the scriptures. Direct knowledge alone leads to salvation. Two categories of yogis have been explained here: those fortunate ones who have no attachments and who have attained the knowledge of skillful action are definitely superior to those who do their duties by performing daily rites and living in the world. The yogi of the first category attains the highest state of tranquility and equanimity and remains unaffected by the influences of the external world. He is never disturbed. Sri Krishna leads Arjuna to this path of skillful, selfless action and non-attachment. Thus ends the eighth chapter, in which the knowledge of the eternal is explained.